All right, thank you. Let the record show that it is 9:00 a.m. Central Time on August 27th. Thank you. He said I didn't have to touch anything, so I didn't. All right. We'll begin again. Let the record show that it is 9:00 a.m. Central Time on August 27th, 2013, and we're present in the hearing room of the Public Service Commission in the State Capitol in Bismarck, North Dakota, for the hearing scheduled in the matter of an application filed by Northern States Power Company, NSP, to increase its rates for electric utility service to provide additional 2013 test year annual revenue of $16,900,000, or a 9.25% increase over current rates effective for electric service on and after January 17, 2013. This is case number PU-12-813. The 2013 proposed monthly increase for a residential customer using 750 kilowatt hours in a winter month is $6.40, and in a summer month is $6.64. On January 30th, 2013, the Commission approved NSP's request for an interim rate increase based on the projected 2013 increase request. The interim rate increase of $14,704,000, or 8.05% over current rates, became effective for electric service on and after February 16th, 2013. NSP is required to refund interim rate amounts in excess of final rates approved by the Commission, including interest. On January 29th, 2013, the Public Service Commission requested the Office of Administrative Hearings provide an administrative law judge to preside as hearing officer in this matter. My name is Bonnie M. Fetch, and I am the duly designated procedural administrative law judge. And at this time, I'm going to ask for appearances for the record, and we'll begin with the applicant, NSP, Kerry Valley.
Good morning, Commissioners, Judge Fetch. Kerry Valley appearing on behalf of XL Energy.
And who is with you, Ms. Valley?
Good morning. Rick Johnson from Wasson Barnett, also appearing on behalf of XL Energy.
Anyone else?
Thank you, Your Honor. We have Deb Paulson, Tim Edmond here to support our rate case. Vice President Laura McCartan is here, as well as the witnesses identified in this proceeding.
All right, thank you. And next, the Commission's Advocacy Staff Counsel, Ryan Norell.
Good morning, Your Honor, Commissioners. Ryan Norell on behalf of North Dakota Public Service Commission Advocacy Staff. Sitting at the table with me is Sarah Cardwell, a public utilities analyst with the Public Service Commission, as well as Mr. Mike Diller, I'd like to identify, is here as well on behalf of advocacy staff, in addition to the witnesses that were submitted prior to this hearing.
Thank you. And next, the Commission's legal counsel.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, advisor to the Commission in this case, and also advising the Commission are Jerry Lean and Patrick Fawn.
Thank you. Did I miss anyone? Okay. All right, and we do have a witness list of 11 identified witnesses for NSP and 5 identified witnesses identified by Mr. Norell. Besides those individuals, is there anyone else present, any members of the public or anyone not mentioned, who is here and intending to present testimony? All right. I don't see any hands raised. Thank you. The deadline date to file petitions to intervene was May 1st, 2013. There were no petitions filed. There are no interveners in this proceeding. Members of the Public Service Commission present today are Brian Kalk, Commission Chair, Randy Christman, and Julie Fedorchik. And at this time, I'm going to ask for their opening comments, beginning with Commissioner Fedorchik, who holds the portfolio in this matter.
Good morning, everyone. Judge Fetch, thank you. Looking forward to today's proceedings. We've been hard at work getting through all the materials. Want to thank everyone for the good job you've done in presenting your cases. As I look at this today, I'm looking at it all about balance. I see this, I'll be looking at the testimony and listening through two lenses. One lens from the view of a potential investor who is looking at investing in your company and what kind of returns they can get, providing you the capital you need to support your growth, et cetera. Also looking at it from the lens of a ratepayer, a business, say a business in Fargo, who is looking at a potential nearly 10% increase in rates and how that might affect them as they move forward in their ability to pay their employees and these kind of costs, kind of pancake. So, and also the lens of a ratepayer on, say, a fixed income and how they might deal with this. So, again, I think it all comes down to balance. I look forward to hearing your cases and taking the next step in this whole process. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchik, for your comments. I would agree with everything she said. Just add a couple thoughts on there. Is the first, if I'm going to be trying the iPad instead of using all the paperwork, so I'm not up here Googling, just for the record. Okay. But the work that everyone's done to this point, I really appreciate it on, you know, the side of the company, Ryan and your crew, advocacy staff, and even the commission advisors. There's a lot of work that takes place before we ever get to this. And I always have to remind myself to slow down for the court reporter. But we had the public input sessions. Quite honestly, they were not very well attended. But I think it's just the public doesn't quite understand the process, I don't think. But it really behooves all of us to make sure we do a thorough job right here because, as Commissioner Fedorchik pointed out, at some point, this will be a final decision, and it'll be looked at for a lot of different reasons, and it's important to develop a full record today from all the different viewpoints. And I think that's why the company has so many witnesses. That's why advocacy staff has a lot of people lined up. And with that, I would just caution everyone that a few years ago, we had a rate case with MDU that the issues were not as far apart as where we're starting at today. And by the fourth day of testimony, it was pretty testy in here. And it was, and that sometimes that's just the nature of the beast because there's a lot of facts that go back and forth that people have different viewpoints. So let's, you know, try to stay focused and get through these things, but understand at the end of the day we got a job that we all have to do. We're going to ask the questions because the rate cases that I've been involved with Excel have actually turned out very well. The last one we did some performance-based rates. It turned out very well. We ended up improving some reliability in the eastern part of the grid. So I think we've got a very good track record of developing a good final solution, and that's what I think the goal here is today, is to get all the cards out on the table, get all the views looked at, answer the questions that we might have, and then we can look forward to coming to a decision. And I think it'll take a while, but we'll get there. Another thought I would have, if something comes up that's trade secret, we talked about this a little bit yesterday in our pre-planning meeting, I'll look at the company to make sure that they advise us of such, because sometimes we forget about what's trade secret and not. You know the data better than we do. And if that comes up, which it has in the past in rate cases, then we'll stop the broadcasting tape, if you will, and we'll start the one that we record for ourselves for the record. I believe that was all that I had for this. So just thank you all very much. And just for our Minnesota customers and representatives, I do have my Vikings tie on for today, so we're looking forward to a good season there as well. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Commissioner Kalk. Commissioner Christman.
Not much to add to that, Your Honor, except to point out just a further thought on the public input sessions we had that weren't well attended, and we didn't get a lot of feedback there, which bothered me more at the time than it does now. This is my first rate case, and as I dig into all these volumes of information, I see that, you know, it would be hard for the average citizen, the normal member of the public, to really provide a lot of good input. And I think the fact is that they have faith in us to make some tough decisions here. And the amount of information that we have shows that there has been a lot of effort put forth by the company, by our advocacy staff, and by the time we get done with hearings and everything, I think we will have done a thorough job of making sure that all the evidence is on the record and before us so that we can make a good decision on behalf of all the people that Commissioner Fedorchik referenced and do the job that we're chosen to do here. So looking forward to the next few days and then whatever time we need after that to make sure that we have everything we need to make a good decision.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. The issues to be considered in this matter are, one, what is the value of NSP's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Two, what is NSP's rate of return on its property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Three, what is a just and reasonable rate of return on NSP's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Four, what rates and charges are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return on NSP's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Five, are NSP's proposed rate schedules designed in such a manner that they result in a basis of charge to its customers that is just and reasonable without discrimination? And six, other relevant information or proposals concerning the proceeding. I'm going to outline the hearing procedure. We had a pre-hearing conference about a week or so ago, and planned out and agreed to a number of things to make this run a little more smoothly. So this is the hearing procedure that we're going to follow. The applicant, NSP, has the burden to show that its application should be approved by the North Dakota Public Service Commission. NSP has submitted a witness list identifying 11 witnesses, and each witness called by NSP will be subject to cross-examination by Mr. Norell, questioning from Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco. And after that, members of the Public Service Commission may ask questions. I may also ask questions. Following completion, and we're going to try to get through NSP's case today. And in order to accommodate that, the commissioners have asked that we extend the time for today to what is necessary up until perhaps 8 o'clock, if need be, to complete all of NSP's case in one day. So we're shooting for that goal. All right. After completion of NSP's case, Mr. Norell will present testimony from Commission advocacy staff. PSC advocacy has identified 5 witnesses, and each witness called by Mr. Norell will be subject to cross-examination by Ms. Valley, and after that, members of the PSC and I may also ask questions. No one else is here, at least today, but I will ask again at the completion of NSP's case and the advocacy staff case whether there is anyone else who has appeared to testify either in support or opposition to the application. As far as exhibits go, NSP has submitted a list of exhibits. NSP 1 through 22, those exhibits were stipulated to and are admitted into the record, so we do not need to stop each time and ask for that. The advocacy staff, I believe there are seven, PSC 1 through 7. Mr. Norrell, were those stipulated too?
Yes, Your Honor, they were.
Okay. So PSC exhibits 1 through 7 are also admitted. Okay. Are there going to be additional exhibits?
Thank you, Judge Fetch. Each of our witnesses also have an opening statement for today, and they have that in written form as well, and we can enter that as an exhibit into the record so that people can go back and read that.
Okay. We agreed at the pre-hearing conference that witnesses are not going to read their pre-filed testimony. The commissioners and the parties have that, so they're not going to read through all of that. We agreed that witnesses can present an opening statement from 0 seconds to 5 minutes in length. And that's just to summarize the salient points in their testimony. All right, this hearing is scheduled for 2 days, today and tomorrow. If needed, we have a third day on Thursday also set aside. We will take an hour break for lunch and an hour for dinner today. And we will be taking breaks throughout the day as needed. If commissioners or the court reporter signal me if you need to take a break at any time. Sometimes I'm, you know, trying to plow through to get to a breaking point that seems right. But at least every hour and a half, the court reporter will need to have a little break. So we'll shoot for that. The proceedings are being recorded for the purpose of creating a record. At the conclusion of this hearing, any party not agreeing with the final decision of the PSC has the right to request a rehearing, reopening, or appeal of the decision to the district court under North Dakota Century Code Chapter 2832. The expense of transcribing these proceedings will be the responsibility of the party appealing the decision. Counsel, are there any questions concerning the procedures?
No, Your Honor.
And you're not shaking your head no, but you need to make a verbal response.
Thank you, Judge Fetch. No.
All right. That's the other thing. I can see you, but we are recording, so we need to have all responses be verbal. And for those of you testifying, please try to remember, you know, there's a temptation to rush through, but, you know, the court reporter needs a little time to keep up. All right. Then if we're ready to proceed, NSP may now proceed to present its case, and Carrie Valley, attorney for NSP, may have 5 to 10 minutes to make an opening statement. And then we'll have the same for Mr. Norrell at the beginning of your case.
Thank you, Your Honor, Chair Kalk, Commissioners. I am Carrie Valley, Assistant General Counsel for Northern States Power Company. We appreciate the opportunity to be here to present our case directly to you today and for our witnesses to be able to directly respond to the questions posed by the Commission. Our witnesses look forward to the opportunity to explain our business and why this rate request is needed to support continued safe, reliable, and cost-effective service to our customers. We were encouraged by the fact that advocacy staff and their consultants have generally supported the main costs that are driving this case. This includes capital additions to our nuclear fleet, as well as other investments to keep our generation, transmission, and distribution systems functioning and reliable. We were, however, concerned with advocacy staff and their consultants' proposals to significantly change the fundamental rate-making practices that the company and the commission have relied upon for many years. Through the course of this proceeding, we will demonstrate that our proposal is consistent with standards of rate-making, reflects the precedent set by this commission, follows standard accounting principles, and reflects an equitable distribution of costs between jurisdictions. In contrast, the rate-making treatment proposed by the staff consultants is inconsistent with principles of rate-making, is a departure from the precedent set by the Commission and North Dakota statutes, and is unsupported by the record in the case. Although there is general agreement on our continued system investments, there are a number of disputed rate-making issues, and I'll briefly highlight some of those. First, the testimony in the record supports the continuation of the use of the 12CP allocator. The standard adopted by this commission in reviewing the jurisdictional allocator is that it reasonably reflect the incremental costs caused by each jurisdiction, be consistently applied among each of the jurisdictions, and is understandable, inexpensive to administer, and does not result in large swings in jurisdictional cost responsibility over time. The company's proposal meets this test. First, the jurisdictional allocator is based on cost causation in all of our jurisdictions, and all four of our jurisdictions use the 12CP allocator. Dr. Pavlovic's proposal to change allocators in North Dakota while other jurisdictions continue to use the 12CP allocator would reduce the company's revenue requirement by approximately $20 million. This would be a stranded cost until the company could persuade FERC, the South Dakota Commission, and the Minnesota Commissions to adopt a change. However, because this commission has recognized in prior cases, there is no basis to move to a 1CP allocator, it is unlikely that any other jurisdiction would adopt a change. The use of the 12CP allocator reflects long-standing regulatory practice in North Dakota. Interveners have previously argued for a 1CP allocator, and the commission has repeatedly rejected that move. The 12CP method was adopted in this state in 1986 in the case that expressly found the 1CP allocator unreasonable. The commission adopted a weighted 12CP method over the 1CP method again in 1991, and the 12CP method was adopted over the 1CP method yet again in 1992. This 12CP method has been consistently used in all of our jurisdictions, and the 1CP has never been used for jurisdictional allocation during all of that time in any of our rate cases. The record reflects there is no reason to depart from this longstanding practice. As Mr. Brockettwell explains in his testimony, the 12CP allocator reflects the need to consider the impact of demand throughout the year on our production portfolio and how transmission serves specific load that peaks at different times of the year. In contrast, Dr. Pavlovic essentially points to the NARUC manual, which lists 13 different methods of allocating costs, including the 1CP method. The record demonstrates that method is simply not appropriate here. With respect to depreciation expense proposed in this proceeding, company witness Ms. Lisa Perquette will explain that the company's proposal is consistent with the settlement approved in our 2007 rate case, and that the company's treatment of removal costs reflects the accounting, reporting, and regulatory practices in North Dakota and everywhere else. In sharp contrast, Mr. Majoros' proposal to stop collecting the remediating non-legal AROs is unsupported by accounting, reporting, or regulatory practices and has the adverse consequence of burdening future ratepayers with today's costs of service. As Ms. Perquette explains, the company must remove retired distribution lines and poles and buildings, which are non-legal AROs, the same way we have to remove asbestos, which is a legal ARO. If we don't recover the cost of removal of those assets during their lives, we will need to recover those costs from future ratepayers after the assets are retired and when those future ratepayers may not have benefited from the asset during its lifetime. In making his recommendation, staff consultant Mr. Majoros has entirely ignored Schedule 7 to Ms. Perquette's testimony, which is the North Dakota-specific depreciation study filed in this case that supports the cost of removal used by the company. Mr. Majoros has not provided evidence that the removal cost for a single asset is overstated. Instead, he argues for a cessation of cost recovery for removal costs for nearly all of our assets. He made the same basic proposal in 2007, and that proposal was appropriately not adopted by this commission. His proposed treatment of non-legal AROs was a bad choice for our customers then, and it continues to be a bad choice for customers today. It's important to note that the company doesn't earn on depreciation. If we don't recover the cost of removal over the life of the asset, then the cost of removal will be added at that time the asset is retired. The company's interests are protected in either case. but Mr. Maduro's proposal is an inappropriate shift of cost responsibility to future customers who would pay for the cost of removal despite having received no benefit from the asset. Recovering retirement costs over the life of the assets is sound rate-making in the interest of our current customers and has been the standard used in North Dakota and every other jurisdiction since regulation began. Now, Mr. King's recommendation on ROE is similarly inconsistent with standards. The ROE recommended by Mr. King is not consistent with returns available from other businesses having similar risks, is not sufficient to support access to capital at reasonable rates, and does not reflect market conditions. In contrast, company witness Ms. Ann Bulkley will demonstrate that the proposed ROE of 10.25% in the range of 10 to 10.5% is reasonable and reflects market conditions. And with respect to the test year in this case, the company's proposal matches test year expenses, sales, and revenues to appropriately match costs and revenues over a consecutive 12-month period as required by statute, consistent with this commission's approved test years in every other rate case we have filed. In contrast, Mr. Mugrace uses a 3-year historical average to determine all operating expenses, but then uses a future 2013 test year to determine revenues. That proposal is contrary to the express statutory requirement that a test year include 12 consecutive months of revenues matched to the same 12 consecutive months of expenses. His proposed mismatch of historical averages with projected revenues is unprecedented and contrary to the fundamental principles of Mugrace. Of rate making. Mr. Mugrace has provided no evidence that any of our 2013 expenses are not reasonably representative of actual expenses in the test year. Rather, he uses expenses that exclude any consideration of 2013 expenses. And in fact, the average expenses proposed by Mr. Mugrace are lower than the expenses approved in our 2010 rate case. His proposal should be rejected. His proposal to disallow incentive comp due to the compensation due to the decision of the Wisconsin Commission is similarly unsupported. Our witness, Ms. Sharon Koenig, will explain that the annual incentive is a component of total compensation package for our employees, without which we would be paying significantly below market levels. They are not bonuses. They are payments to our employees who have performed in a manner that qualifies them to receive a level of compensation needed to compete with other utilities.
You have one more minute, Ms. Valley.
And we also note that there are several issues raised by advocacy staff and that are consultants which are not included in our current rate request. And the bulk of those issues pertain to the company's resources recovered through the FCR and company requests that those be addressed in a separate proceeding as they're not part of base rates in this case. So if for each and every proposed issue, we believe that when you compare our request with the proposals from the staff consultants, you will find that our request is consistent with fundamental and well-established regulatory principles for how rates are set. It's based on costs we will and have incurred as this case has proceeded, and our proposals are consistent with the regulatory compact between the state and the company and appropriately balances the interests of the company and our customers. Thank you.
Thank you. Are all 11 of your witnesses present, Ms. Valley?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Sorry. They are present in the building. Some are in another room. Thank you.
All right. Are all 5 of your witnesses present, Mr. Norrell?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. All witness testimony at this hearing is taken under oath and is subject to penalties for perjury. By law, I am required to inform witnesses as to those penalties, and I'm going to do that at this time. I'll repeat it for those who are not here. Perjury is any material misstatement of fact. In North Dakota, it is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum fine of $5,000, 5 years in prison, or both. At this time, if there is nothing further, we're going to proceed with your first witness.
Thank you. The company will call as its first witness, Ms. Laura McCartan.
Be sure and hit the button there. It should come on and show blue.
Yep.
All right.
It's showing blue now. Is this coming through? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Ms. McCartan, please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under pains and penalties of perjury?
I do.
Thank you. All right. And as agreed, Commissioner Fedorchik, did you have a question?
You mentioned, or the company mentioned, that the opening comments would be submitted as evidence as well. Do we get copies of those?
Yes, I think that's what's being passed out right now.
Thank you.
Is that what you have there, is Ms. McCartan's opening statement?
Yes.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Ms. Valley, proceed.
Thank you. Ms. McCartan, your testimony is marked as Exhibits 5 and 6 and have been entered into the record. Do you have any corrections to that testimony today?
Yes, I do.
Could you please identify those corrections?
Yes, the corrections are to Exhibit 6, my rebuttal testimony. There are several places in here, and I will articulate those where I incorrectly attributed information to witness Mr. McGrace rather than Dr. Pavlovich. So I will correct those references. So in Exhibit 6, page 18, line 23, change the reference to from Mr. McGrace to Dr. Pavlovich, and this will be the same correction through each of the line pages and lines that I will now go through. So the first one was page 18, line 23. The second is page 19, line 26. The third is page 20, line 6. Again on page 20, line 16. On page 21, line 7, line 12, line 15, and line 16. And that's the those are all of the corrections I wish to make.
Thank you, Ms. McCartan. And Ms. McCartan, do you have an opening statement today?
Yes.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners, judge, commission staff, and consultants. I'm Laura McCartan, Regional Vice President for Northern States Power Company. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to explain our rate request and help develop a full and thorough record for the commission. Our modified rate request seeks commission approval for a $14.9 million revenue requirement increase based on updated financial information and a 10.25% return on equity request. This rate request is necessary to support ongoing investments into our system to ensure safe and reliable service for our customers. These investments include life extensions of both the Prairie Island and Monticello nuclear power plants and a power upgrade at Monticello. We are also seeking recovery of investments in transmission and distribution systems. These investments are in our customers' interests, both in the near term and the long term, as reliable electric service is one of the highest priorities for our customers and is a key factor in supporting economic growth. We appreciate advocacy staff and the consultants' general support for the investments we are making. While staff and their consultants don't agree on all aspects of our rate request, we are encouraged that the bulk of our request is not in dispute. We do recognize the cost impact that these investments have on our customers, and we're eager to work with commission and staff on ways to reduce or mitigate this cost impact. To this end, I've offered in my rebuttal testimony two proposals. First, the use of a cost smoothing mechanism for our pension expense. And second, the use of a capital step to address future recovery of capital investments that we know we will be making. I also note that commission approval of our proposed transmission cost recovery rider would help to mitigate the frequency of future general rate requests. I look forward to a full discussion of these possible mitigation mechanisms. As Ms. Valley noted, we are concerned with consultants' proposals to reverse longstanding rate-making practices in North Dakota. We believe it is a better practice, is in the interest of our customers, and is consistent with current circumstances to use the rate-making methodologies that this commission has had in place for 20 years or more. The most significant proposed change is that to our demand allocator. As company witness Scott Brockett will explain in more detail, using a 12 CP allocator remains the most appropriate jurisdictional allocation method for an integrated system such as ours, is consistent with standards of rate making and with this commission's precedent, and is supported by the record in this case. We also recognize the concerns of the commission and staff regarding the energy policy differences between states and how these differences may affect our North Dakota customers. We have been complying with commitments to this commission with respect to these issues, and we believe that we're making resource decisions that are prudent and in the interests of all of our customers. We'll continue to meet these commitments to ensure that this commission's concerns are met while allowing the company to recover its costs of service and earn a reasonable rate of return. Other recommendations of staff and their consultants relate to costs that are not part of this rate request. For example, Dr. Pavlovic recommends disallowance of further recovery in our fuel cost rider of the costs of certain power purchase agreements that have been in place for several years. Because these costs are recovered in the fuel clause rider, they are by definition not part of base rates and thus not part of this pending rate request. But should the commission want to address recovery of these power purchase agreement costs in the fuel clause rider, the appropriate way to do so would be with a separate proceeding where a complete record can be developed. And we're very willing to work with the commission and staff to ensure that the commission has a timely opportunity to review any costs that we propose to recover through the fuel clause rider. Similarly, staff's recommendation to disallow certain costs of new wind acquisitions should be addressed in the advanced determination of prudency dockets that are already in place for those projects. Again, those projects are not part of this rate case. Finally, I want to acknowledge the Commission's interest in and concerns with the new Minnesota solar standard. I commit to you that we will make every effort to mitigate the impact of this Minnesota requirement on our North Dakota customers. In summary, we appreciate the general agreement of the parties on the prudence of the necessary investments that are the drivers for this case. However, the disagreements are important in both are significant in terms of both importance and magnitude. We believe that the application of longstanding rate-making principles in North Dakota will result in an outcome that is fair, consistent with this commission's precedent and current circumstances, and that appropriately balances the interests of our customers with that of the company. And beyond this rate case, we look forward to working in a continued cooperative effort with the staff and the commission on fuel clause rider issues and other energy policy issues that could affect our customers in North Dakota. Thank you.
All right, and that is marked as NSP Exhibit 23. Mr. Norell, is there any objection to this being entered?
No, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. NSP 23 is admitted.
Thank you, Your Honor. The witness is available for cross-examination.
Mr. Norell?
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. McCartan?
Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to just start with some broad and maybe narrow down on some of our questions here. One of the things that we noticed throughout your testimony is the repeated statement that the company and other witnesses state this as well, that the company is in a significant cycle of significant system investment and has been spending quite a bit of money each year to accommodate this. Could you state when the company believes this system of investment will end? Is there an end in sight?
Mr. Norell, I believe that we do have in this year and the next year, and I think in the subsequent year, we do have costs that will continue to be incurred to finish out investments in some of our major systems, to finish out the full project completion of some of the major investments that we are making. That includes investments to finish out the nuclear projects, the life extension, which adds 20 years of life for those nuclear power plants, and significant investments that complete some of our major transmission projects, for example, the CapEx 2020 projects. I believe that takes us into the next couple of years. Beyond that, I'm not aware of projects of that magnitude that are kicking in. So I think that over the next couple of years, these significant investments will be completed and those costs will show up.
So we're looking 2015, 2016. Would that be appropriate?
I don't have that information right in front of me, but I think it's through probably 2016 when the major investments in those CapEx 2020 transmission projects are concluded.
And are these projects, are these going to be of a benefit to the ratepayers, to the actual subscribers and customers in North Dakota?
Yes. For example, the investments in our nuclear power plants are investments that allow those plants to operate for another 20 years. It's good baseload, well-priced, clean energy that serves all customers in our integrated system, including North Dakota customers. The investments in our high-voltage transmission system ensure that the regional transmission system will continue to operate reliably, meet federal standards for redundancy and reliability, and be present to connect to new power sources in the future as those are needed. Those benefits accrue to all of our customers in the integrated system, including North Dakota customers.
Excuse me one second. Could you slow down just a little bit, Ms. McCartan? At the beginning, I said the proceedings were being recorded. They are being recorded by a court reporter, and she needs to be able to get what you're saying.
Thank you, Judge. I appreciate that caution. I will do so.
Mr. Norrell, continue.
Thank you. Is it the company's position that it deserves a higher ROE because of this particular investment cycle?
I would say our position is that we should get an ROE that is commensurate with our investment needs to serve our customers. And one of the major drivers for setting an ROE is what is needed to attract capital. We are a very capital intensive business. We need to borrow money to make the investments, which are very costly into our system. And we ask a ROE level that we think gives us the opportunity to appropriately attract capital to support those investments.
Would it be appropriate then, when the investment cycle ends, to expect a lower return or to seek a lower return going forward after that?
Mr. Norrell, I would perhaps direct that question to our future witness or our Ann Buckley, but I think that every rate case, I think we would make the case as to the circumstances at that time, what is appropriate to attract the capital that's needed to invest in our company, and it would entail looking at the financial markets and other competing investments that investors have available to them.
By virtue of working with the PSC, we get to hear from some customers. Some customers have expressed concern that the size of this increase is excessive and they can't afford it. We have retired individuals on fixed incomes who have similar concerns. How would you respond to these concerns of customers?
I appreciate that. And we hear directly from customers as well, those concerns. And I think what we're trying to do is to operate our business as efficiently as possible, but we have an obligation to serve customers. So when we identify a need, either for power supply or investments in the grid to ensure reliability, we have an obligation to act on that. I would say that we act on it in a method that we think is prudent and try to manage costs as to keep them as low as possible. I mean, we do also try to offer our customers suggestions on how they can manage their energy use so that they can control their bill even as rates go up. So we appreciate the concern that customers have, but I think the consequences of not making these investments would be even worse for our customers.
You had mentioned maybe some encouragement with customers on managing their energy use, balancing that with the obligation to serve those customers. It seems then like the burden would be put on the customer to conserve, you know, it's on the customer to save the costs. What kind of incentives are there on the company to cut the cost?
I think that rate cases like these are clearly incentives, and we have to come in and show that the costs that we incur are necessary to run the business, that we are making, that they're prudent costs, and that we're managing our business well. So certainly with the oversight of regulators, we do have that incentive. I think that we, throughout our business, we manage as a business, we manage to budgets, things happen that are outside of our plan, and we have to react to those. So it's sort of a constant thing that we look at every day is, how are we managing our business? Where are the costs? Where can we avoid costs if possible? But at the end of the day, we still have this obligation to serve and invest in the system in order to provide reliable, safe service to our customers.
Naturally, from a customer's perspective, an easy target is always up at the top of a company. Well, the executive's got an X percent amount of raise. Could you address executive pay? Is that an area where possibly the company could legitimately look at cutting costs there?
In response to that, I would say that our decisions on compensation for every employee in the company, from executives through to the front line, union labor, people like me, everybody in the company, it's all based upon trying to establish ourselves to be competitive in the market. We do need to attract employees that are skilled in order to, again, provide good service to our customers. And if we don't offer a market competitive compensation, we won't be able to attract or retain the type of skilled employees that we need to run the business. I can't speak to the particulars of the executive's compensation, but I can tell you that all of our compensation is driven by the market competitiveness.
Okay. The company, I believe, told its investors that it had a good year in 2012. Would you agree that 2012 was a good year for the company?
I believe that's correct for Xcel Energy, the overall holding company.
Okay. If Xcel Energy had a good year in 2012, then why is there a need for a rate case in 2013?
Okay. So this particular rate case is looking at our performance in this jurisdiction, North Dakota. And I think that what we've presented is evidence that our revenue requirements are increasing because of the investments we're making into the NSP system to serve all of our customers. And without this request, then we would not be performing anywhere near what would be a targeted or expected level of financial performance that our investors are looking for this jurisdiction, nor would we really be able to provide the service level that our customers need. So the Xcel Energy overall holding company, the performance of that is affected by the performance of each of the four operating companies, NSP Minnesota, NSP Wisconsin, Public Service of Colorado, and Southwestern Public Service, which is based in Texas. So the overall performance of Xcel Energy is the aggregate of all of those. But for this rate case, we're looking at the particulars of this jurisdiction.
One of the things that's been discussed is the fuel clause rider, fuel cost rider, and it's been stated by the company that this is not part of that of this case and should be addressed in a separate case. In North Dakota, we have a small commission, small staff. It would be a burden upon the commission to undertake that kind of project. Would it be a burden on the company? Would it incur more cost on the company, which would then be passed along to customers if we did a separate proceeding on the FCR?
I assume so, but I would also say that without such a proceeding, we don't have a complete record on which to make a decision. So I think it would be appropriate to do that.
When most customers look at their bill, they probably look at the total. They're not splitting down the bill. Do you think the customers would react differently if the rate base was lower as opposed to the cost rider? Or would it be the same reaction to a customer?
I agree with you. Customers look at the bottom line, the total bill.
Okay. As some of the some of the ways to reduce expense and cost to the company. You mentioned in your testimony the Black Dog and Prairie Island upgrades were canceled, and because the CapEx 2020 programs were spread over time, those are examples of smoothing some costs. Were those projects, in particular Black Dog and Prairie Island upgrades, were those as a result of lack of load that those were actually cut or canceled over time?
With respect to the Prairie Island uprate, this was a project where we were doing investments at the Prairie Island nuclear plant in order to allow it to produce more power, a significant amount of more power, I think something on the order of 70 megawatts. And as we proceeded with that project, circumstances changed. I think that the future customer growth did change and was reduced. Also, another change that was happening is the cost of completing that project, we were estimating they would be higher than we originally thought. And at the same time, the cost of alternative energy supplies, particularly those fueled by natural gas, were coming down. When we put all that together, we said the need is less. The cost of meeting that need by continuing the Prairie Island project is greater than we first thought. And the cost of alternatives to provide that power supply is now less costly. We put that all together and we said it no longer is in the best interest of our customers to conclude the Prairie Island uprate project. Oh, and excuse me, then you asked about the Black Dog project.
Yep.
So the Black Dog project was a proposal to build a certain type of power plant at an existing power plant, something called a combined cycle natural gas-fueled power plant. That's the type of power plant that serves a particular type of need for our customers. It's not a peaking need typically. It's something that runs more often over the course of a year. And it's more costly than, say, a peaking power plant. Again, as we saw our customer needs changing, our forecast of what our customer needs would be out over the future, and the cost of that project, it again seemed to us that that wasn't the best project to meet our customers' needs. It was the most cost-effective project to meet our customers' needs. So we also ceased that project.
You mentioned looking long-term over customer needs. It sounds like there's not as much growth as anticipated. Would it be accurate to say that?
I think since 2008, there was a huge downturn in energy usage by our customers, and that's slowly coming back. But I think that we are forecasting a much flatter rate of growth out into the future than what most utilities saw prior to 2008.
Is the company currently planning an acquisition of about 750 megawatts of wind energy?
That's correct. We have proposed in our commissions, various commissions, to secure those. It's four projects at this point, I believe, yes.
What impact does that have with a potential lower or planing load growth over time? How does that help smooth out investments over time?
Those particular projects will overall reduce customer costs because they will displace the use of energy generated by other higher cost energy sources. So it may serve some growth, but even if there was no growth, it would displace higher priced generation. So net reduced cost to our customers.
Would the company be looking at replacing those other units if there wasn't a 30% renewable portfolio standard in Minnesota?
Is your question, those other units, you mean the 750 megawatts of proposed wind, is that what you're referring to?
The units that proposed wind project would replace. Would the company be looking at those wind projects if there wasn't the 30% renewable portfolio in place?
Yes, those projects serve our customers on their face by the reduced cost to customers that they provide. So that alone provides value to our customers.
How much of the company's transmission expenditures how much percent do you put into wind transmission from the wind farms to the base load? Sorry.
Mr. Norrell, I don't think I can answer that question. I know several years ago there were some projects, that there was some transmission investment that was tied directly to wind. But for example, the CapEx 2020, that's a general purpose that it serves. So I don't think I can answer your question, and perhaps there is someone else here we can direct that to.
Okay. We've seen studies where it looks like up to 75% of the cost of transmission investments are necessary for wind integration. So I guess our question is wondering, if there wasn't this additional wind development, would customers' costs be lower?
Mr. Norrell, I believe that the rationale and the reason that we were got approval from our regulatory commissions to proceed with the CapEx 2020 projects, which are 345 kV high voltage transmission, comes into North Dakota, into South Dakota, and over into Wisconsin, that was approved based upon an overall providing value for attending to local reliability issues, regional reliability issues, and then providing a more robust network that would connect to all types of energy sources. I'm not familiar with what you're referring to with that 70%. So I'm not familiar with that piece of information. I don't think I've seen that.
Looking to other ways the company could control costs, we've heard that the company is moving to new corporate headquarters. What's going to happen to the old corporate headquarters on the Nicollet Mall in Minneapolis?
Okay, so these are costs that are not part of this rate case, first of all. This is a future project, but we have an existing corporate headquarters on Nicollet Mall in Minneapolis. We also lease space in another building that's about two blocks away where a lot of office personnel are housed. The new building will be built across the street from the existing corporate headquarters, so we will retain the existing corporate headquarters. And then rather than leasing space where we currently do, we'll have a new building and we'll be leasing that space, and we'll bring all of the employees from that other building over across the street from our existing headquarters. So we'll keep our existing building that we currently own, and we'll stop leasing in the current location and instead occupy the new building, which we will be occupying under a lease arrangement. I think that was expected in about 2016.
Will this be saving customers in the end money at all?
My understanding is that our evaluation is that it's very comparable in cost to continuing the lease at the existing building that we have today. I believe we've also identified non-quantified benefits that we think we will experience in terms of greater efficiency and being able to work with two buildings just right across the street from each other. I don't know all the particulars of that, but I think that we believe it is a good investment for our customers.
How could you give an example of how those non-quantified benefits would help a customer?
Well, again, I don't have that in front of me because it's not part of this case. We're not asking for cost recovery of that future investment. So I'm sorry, I don't have that information readily available.
Okay. So let's look to a past issue. Could you just briefly describe the Sherco failure for the commission?
I will try. I'm somewhat familiar with that. But we have our largest power plant in the state of Minnesota that serves all of our customers is a coal-fueled power plant called Sherburne County, and we call it Sherco for short. There are three coal-burning units there. The Sherco 3 was the unit that experienced this failure, and I believe it was in the fall of 2012, approximately November. As they were coming out of a maintenance outage, which we periodically do at these large units to refurbish everything, one of the most significant steps at startup is to take the massive turbine generator unit, which is truly massive, and to put it through tests before you actually bring it up and start the plant operating a normal operation. And during one of those tests, that turbine generator unit experienced a massive failure and suffered extensive damage to the turbine, the generator, other parts of that unit. We are now, we have gone through a very massive, extensive repair process. We are at this moment going through startup activities and testing activities. If all goes well, we expect to have that unit back synchronized to the grid and generating power by the end of September.
Who is paying for the repair of this Sherco 3 unit?
It's my understanding that most of that is being covered by the insurance costs that we carry for that unit.
Will insurance then in turn go up because of this accident?
I do not know.
If insurance did indeed go up, how would the increase in the insurance costs be recovered?
The question of whether insurance costs will go up, I guess the one thing I would also say is that we have determined through extensive forensic analysis of that accident and what the cause was, the root cause was in the manufacturing of the turbine itself. There was something called stress corrosion cracking that happened that was due to original manufacturing methodology or materials. I don't know whether that then would influence our insurance because it wasn't an operational issue on our part. If insurance costs would go up in any part of our business, I do believe that's part of the cost of doing business, and we would certainly stand to prove that we've secured reasonably priced, prudently priced coverage, but we would see that as a cost of business. And so we would seek recovery of that through our rates.
Just, I apologize, just consulting over here in the corner.
Take a drink.
We talked earlier about the change in the Prairie Island plant. So it looked like there were some potential cost overruns of nuclear, or appears, there's an appearance at least of cost overruns in nuclear projects. There's major repairs needed at Black Dog. Sherco, you've discussed potentially that may not have been a company issue, but there's still the question that we'd like to ask, pose on behalf of consumers, is there a pattern of mismanagement at the company? What are your thoughts on that question?
My thoughts are no, there's not. And I'm not sure what your reference was to the repairs at Black Dog.
The unit 2-5?
Repairs? I'm sorry, you used the term repairs at Black Dog. I'm not sure what that's referencing.
I'm not sure either. We'll just strike this line of question.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go to the 12CP method here. On the bottom of page 2 and continuing on the page 3 of your rebuttal, you state that the CP method preserves the company's ability to provide the kind of service your customers depend and expect. Would you please explain what kind of service that is that the customers depend and expect from your position, from your opinion?
Sure. Our customers expect that we're going to provide safe electrical service at all times. They expect and require highly reliable electric service. They expect that we are planning our business in a way that looks to the future and takes steps now such that we don't fall into situations of compromising safety or reliability. Our customers want us to be cost-effective. They want us to spend the money we need to, but not more. They want to have a affordable bill. We know that. Our customers also want us to do all of those things as well as possible, and to the extent that we can also continue to achieve clean energy, they want that as well. So at a very high level, I think those are definitely our customers' expectations.
I would like to, with your permission, Your Honor, I would like to approach a stand. I have an exhibit for the witness, and I will definitely provide this to counsel as well.
Go ahead, Mr. Norrell. You just have one copy?
I do not. I'm just providing for review.
All right. This would be PSC-8.
Bigger font is not a crime, just so you know.
Right.
And what is this exhibit, Mr. Norrell?
This is a cable outage report. It is our belief that this is the latest. Have you seen this before, Ms. McCartan?
I have not reviewed this before, but I'm familiar with the compliance reporting of this type of information, with the fact that that does exist.
The council or PSC staff would like to admit this as PSC 8.
Any objection, Ms. Valley?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
All right. PSC Exhibit 8 is admitted. Proceed, Mr. Norrell, please.
Thank you. I believe if you look at the bottom, this is outages through the end of June. Is that correct?
That appears to be correct, yes.
How many outages, then, would this be at the total for the first 6 months of 2013?
This chart has 33 lines in it. Each appears to designate a separate outage.
Could you look at line number 7 and tell us where that outage was, how long it was, and how many customers were affected?
Line 7, it's a February 16th event, 10:13 a.m. The outage duration is 2 hours and 25 minutes. It occurred in Grand Forks. 1,139 customers were impacted.
Could you look at line 12 as well and state the same, the date, the duration, the location, and how many customers?
March 29th, 5:03 p.m. The duration was 1 hour and 6 minutes. It occurred in Grand Forks, and 1,359 customers were affected.
Do you know if these lines will be replaced? And if not, what is the criteria for when these lines would be replaced?
You know, since I haven't seen this before, I think this question would be best answered by one of our other witnesses.
Do you know which witness?
Steve Foss.
Thank you. The company each year prepares a comparison study for Xcel Energy and compares the company to peer utility groups. Is that correct?
I'm aware that we do that on a variety of comparisons and performance metrics, so a lot of that happens.
I'd like to ask you a couple questions regarded to one. May I approach the stand, Your Honor?
Yes, you may.
Your Honor, what I have handed out is it's actually a response to data request 10003, a supplemental response, and commission staff would like to admit this as PSC 9.
Is there any objection, Ms. Valley?
Thank you, Your Honor. No objection.
Okay. PSC Exhibit 9 is admitted.
Ms. McCartan, are you familiar with the document in front of you?
I don't think I've reviewed this.
Could you look at the top page, which is in the bottom marked page 2 on the docket sticker? It's marked attachment A, page 3 of 23.
Okay, I have that.
Could you look for this and tell us how many rankings in the top 10% or top quarter NSP Minnesota had for 2012.
This report, the rankings for 2011?
I'm sorry, yes, okay. 2011.
This report's, again, your question is for NSP Minnesota?
Yes.
Okay, it says zero in the top decile.
Did NSP Minnesota fare better in previous years than in this report?
I don't know.
Do you happen to know what the primary causes of why there weren't any top rankings in this report?
I can't speak to this report specifically, but if I could, I would just note that we've talked about the fact that our company is in a significant investment cycle right now to refresh and modernize our system, things like investing in the nuclear power plants. Every utility could be at a different point in that cycle. So the things that affect costs are they're complex, and it's I don't know how where those other utilities are that the comparison is here, in particular with respect to cost.
I apologize. Just a second. We're trying to get some documents straight here. On page, it's marked 16 on the bottom right-hand corner. I apologize. I think these are double-sided, too. That's part of the issue I'm having on my page, is flipping back and forth. It states on the bottom right-hand corner, retail sales per megawatt hour. This shows that NSP has the highest retail sales per megawatt hour. How do you reconcile this with trying to encourage customers to use less electricity?
So this chart shows three lines on it. You know, I really don't know how this chart was calculated, so I just can't answer your question. I'm just not familiar with this document.
Okay. At other points in this document, I believe it'd be back on page 10. It states the highest percent of non-fuel O&M costs as compared to retail revenue and megawatt sales. In 2011 or 2010, 2011, 2012, NSPM has the highest non-fuel O&M costs relative to retail sales. Do you know why that would be?
Just to be sure I'm with you, you're referring to page 10. It's labeled as page 10 in the lower right hand.
Yes.
And the charts that I see are for 2009, 2010, 2011.
Oh, I apologize. I'm on attachment B. This would be page. I believe there are two attachments. There are two different years.
Okay, so
I'm sorry.
Attachment B, page 11 of 23.
Yes.
Okay, and could you please ask the question again?
Page 10. This shows that NSPM has the highest non-fuel operating and maintenance costs as related to retail megawatt hour sales. Do you know why that would be?
I don't know particularly why that would be. You know, other than to say that whatever costs we need to run our business, which, you know, it always goes through extensive review by our regulatory commissions over these periods.
Okay, we're done with this attachment, this exhibit.
you get this information from?
It was submitted as part of a data request earlier in the case.
So
it is not part of the
Xcel Energy?
Yes, it did come from Xcel Energy. The company allocates all transmission costs to all jurisdictions. Is that correct?
It's my understanding that transmission costs are shared across all of our jurisdictions, yes.
Even when a transmission line might be between two substations in Minnesota?
That might be a question better directed to Steve Foss, but I think the criteria is it an element of the high voltage grid that's needed for regional reliability? And interestingly enough, with the grid and the way it works, you can have segments that are very critical that can be very far afield from a particular customer, but that customer can be affected by the performance or of a segment of the high voltage transmission grid that isn't directly next door to it.
In testimony from the company, from yourself as well, the other witnesses, the company has stated that there's been things that are based on precedents here. Would the company, if the commission was looking to change or move from precedents to something that benefited the company, would the company be raising the same argument in that situation?
I think we would always take the position that the best decisions are guided by principled rate making and the regulatory compact that says what is the cost of the activity, who should properly pay for that activity, did the company incur reasonable and prudent cost to provide the service, and what's the correct balance between customers and the company. So I think we would always come to every question with that same perspective: is what do the principles of rate making and the regulatory compact direct us to, and what do the facts tell us?
Could you explain for the commission briefly what a 12-month coincidental peak demand allocation method is?
I'm definitely going to refer you to our witness on that, Scott Brockett.
Okay. Do you know how long the company has been using a 12-CP method?
I am going actually by Ms. Valley's opening statement that we have been using this for, I think, a couple of decades across all of our jurisdictions here in the NSP integrated system here. So that would be North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin.
Do you know which method the company used prior to 12CP?
I don't.
You'd stated, and Ms. Valley had stated as well in opening statements, about the principles of rate making. Is 1CP an approved method of rate making?
I would again direct you to our expert witness, Scott Brockett, for that discussion.
An issue that you had brought up was the... let me check really quick. In the rebuttal testimony and also at other places, it's discussed the incentive compensation issues. Do you happen to know, did Wisconsin approve or deny incentive compensation for NSP employees?
I believe the Wisconsin Commission denied that. If I may just take a look at my testimony.
I believe page 10 of your rebuttal testimony.
Thank you. Yes, the Wisconsin Public Service Commission decided to not allow incentive compensation in rates.
Do you know the reasons why Wisconsin disallowed those?
I don't.
Do you have a witness who could testify to those reasons?
Do we have a witness who could testify as to why Wisconsin disallowed the incentive compensation? I know we have an incentive compensation witness. I'm not sure if she's familiar with the Wisconsin Commission's decision and rationale on that. I would note, I guess I've made this point in my testimony, that pulling a single aspect of a commission's decision and using it to guide a decision here is really not consistent with the rate making, which looks at the overall revenue requirement. It looks at the totality of how issues were handled. The Wisconsin Commission also awarded us a 10.4 ROE and allowed for about 90% of recovery of the cost that we requested. So
it's fair to say, though, that looking to other states isn't out of the question, just to get a gauge of the regulatory environment.
In general, I think that that's true. We do look to other states for directions that are happening.
Okay. On page 15 of your rebuttal testimony, we talk about charitable contributions. And you state that these have been approved in North Dakota in the past. Do you know if those were approved via a settlement agreement, however?
I'm not certain, Mr. Norrell. I'm sorry.
How does a charitable contribution enhance or provide a better utility service to your customers?
I think for both charitable contributions and the contributions we make to economic activity in the communities we serve are a couple of things. They're part of what our customers and our communities expect of us as corporate citizens of that community. I think it helps to build a strong community. It helps to encourage economic vitality and hopefully economic growth. And that in turn helps all of our customers, because as we have more units of energy to spread fixed costs over, if we have good economic growth, then customers benefit because their share of the cost are less than they could otherwise be. And we actually saw this when we had a significant economic downturn and units of energy dropped significantly. We had to share more cost, and this was in a different jurisdiction, but just by way of illustration, it's sort of an extreme. We had to share fixed costs over fewer units of energy, and in that case, that was a contributor to a rate request. So encouraging economic vitality, we think, helps our customers in that roundabout way of helping to spread fixed costs over more energy usage.
Do the customers have any sort of say in which economic development organizations or which charities get the funds that NSP gives to them or donates?
We are guided in our decisions about where we contribute for charitable contributions and economic activity that we engage in by the communities that we serve, and more specifically by the employees of Xcel Energy that live in those communities and that are leaders of those communities. So we think that we are well aligned in our community's desires and needs, and we make our decisions for charitable and economic activity are informed by those. So I think we are responsive to our overall customer intentions or desires.
What if a customer or even an employee disagrees with where the money's going? Is there any sort of avenue for redress, or how do they change that?
Well, if someone were to take issue with how we're making charitable contributions or making an economic development, they certainly can reach out to us and share their concerns with us. In fact, people do that. But at some point, we have to figure out how do we act in a manner that we think comports with the interests and of the majority of our customers and with our communities, even if there may be individuals that disagree with parts of those decisions.
In your rebuttal testimony, page 10, line 6, here we're talking about, and this has been brought up before so far in the hearing, the historical basis that's been used and the company takes issue with. Has the company, do you know, provided any actual results of its operations in 2013, such as quarterly financial reports or semi-annual reports, to determine that its projected forecasts are in line with actual operations in North Dakota?
Have we provided reports that report on what aspects are in particular are you speaking of?
I guess any sort of quarterly financial reports to let us know where your projections are versus where your actuals are for 2013.
Oh, for projection for 2013? I don't believe we provided a projection for 2013. We have provided, once we have actuals after the end of a calendar year, we provided data for 2012, I believe, and before. And I may not be... I'm not aware of reports, if we've filed any, about our financial projected financial performance for 2013.
Is 2013 the test year that you're using?
Yes, it is. So in that respect, our whole rate case is a projection. So it's a projection based upon certain assumptions.
And you don't have anything throughout the year that you're going to check those assumptions against?
Well, we did revise our request. So our original request was at a certain level with a certain requested ROE, and we did revise that to reflect some changing market conditions, so different ROE, and some changes in our revenue requirement analysis, which brought our request down. So it's about an 8% request at this point. I'm not sure exactly what you may be asking of me beyond that.
Well, we're just wondering if you have any actual numbers to help provide. One of the contentions is that we use a historical test, or we use a 3-year historical average. One of the reasons for that is we don't have any actual numbers from the company regarding where they're at in 2013. It's all just a projection, and there's nothing to ground it. How would you respond to that?
I guess I would respond to that. Using projected expenses and projected revenues is the basis and the standard for the test year here in North Dakota, and it has been how we've approached it in our previous rate cases. And so beyond that, I think you'd have to ask one of our attorneys, I guess.
How does the company determine that the forecasted data is accurate and reliable?
Okay, I think we put together a forecast of what our expenses are and revenues, and a lot goes into that. There is, for example, a budget system that says here's the cost that we need to incur in 2013. And if I could just speak to that a little bit, all of the costs that come through that are reflected in our 2013 case really result from a very extensive set of planning and budgeting on what projects need to be done. As a very capital-intensive business, it's basically the core of what we have to do because we have to manage so much money because of the nature of our business. The planning, prioritization, executing of projects is basically the core of what we do. So part of our rate request in 2013 is driven by investments on the resource planning side, or the resource side, in particular our nuclear power plants. And we've spoken a lot about those. Those investments were needed to extend the life another 20 years. Those investments had to happen now in order to get those license renewals. The planning for that started several years ago, and it culminates then and when the project work gets done, which includes last year, this year, and even into next year. So that's a big part of what our 2013 test year is. Another part of it is in spending in our transmission and distribution part of our business. The budgets for 2013 that are created starting from a process that begins with the frontline people who manage the system, engineers, operators, planners, whether in the distribution side, the transmission side, or the power supply side. They start by looking at where are there problems or risks of safety, reliability, plant performance, compliance with legal requirements or regulatory requirements, and they develop proposed projects to address those risks. Our standard process internally is they have to then develop data for all of those projects that identify what's the driver, what's the risk, what's the timing of the risk, what happens if you don't do the project. And then from that, a list of proposed projects with all these screening criteria are developed, and it runs through several layers of management, continuing a process of review, evaluation, and prioritization that ultimately says, here are the projects that we absolutely need to do to fulfill our obligation for service to customers, operate safely, meet legal and environmental and regulatory requirements. And then each business unit brings those projects up, and that's reviewed on a corporate basis. So at a corporate level, they're looking at what does distribution think it needs to do, how much money, what are the criteria, transmission, energy supply, and a totality of a view is taken as to are these the costs that we need to spend in this year. That's how we create a budget for a particular year. We also do five-year plans. So we do year-by-year budgets, and we're also doing sort of a rolling five-year plans so that we can see projects that are going to be out in the future further than this year. All of that is in our test year. All of that is vetted to the fullest of our ability to say, this is what we need to do. Here's why we need to do it. Here's the cost that we're going to be managing to. On the revenue side, put together a forecast for what we think our customers' energy use is going to be. And I think that we probably have data even towards the middle of this year where we can say, here's where our forecast is, here's what the actual is, are we forecasting well? Do we have a good process for forecasting customers' energy growth? So there's a lot that goes into putting together that test year. I think your question was, is there information that says, okay, now we're halfway through the year. Where are you relative to that? I'm not familiar with that information. I don't have that in front of me here.
All right. We're going to take a little break at this time. Mr. Norell, do you know how much longer you're going to be with this witness?
Probably only about 5 more minutes, Your Honor.
Well, take a break and think about it. We're going to take 15 minutes, and it is 10:35. We will resume at 10:50.
On this clock right here.
Yes, sir.